week of March 22nd, 2020. This is Showbiz Sandbox, episode 486, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And in Birmingham, Alabama, I'm Michael Giltz. Hey, Sperling.
I always ask you at the start of the show how you're doing, but now that's kind of a loaded question these days.
How are you doing? I'm upset because the filming of that Friends special to tout the fact that Friends was coming onto HBO Max, that's not happening. They're delaying that because they want to make sure everybody stays safe. And I said, well, thank God, we got to keep the Friends people safe. We can't put them at risk. Can't have them all together.
I think would be great is if they did it, but via Skype. And we just had like different little boxes for each one of them, like the Brady Bunch.
Or we just had them all self-isolated together as friends. And then they'd be like, we hate each other. the Brady Bunch thing is a good idea. But yes, they don't want to tout HBO Max because they may have to delay the launch of HBO Max. You know, they were filming shows and having content available and have tech stuff to do. So I imagine maybe that you know, launch will get delayed. I'm sure they want to do it as soon as possible because a lot of people are saying, what streaming service should I sign up for?
Yes, you should sign up for our streaming service.
Oh, that's right.
Oh my God, you know what I just realized? I totally forgot to put in that email every week.
Are you kidding me?
I kid you not. We should do a special show just about this email.
Well, at this point, you know, we'll be back to black and white before the email comes out. You know, there'll be no color left in the world.
That might be true.
So now that tells us what we won't be talking about on this week's show, but tell us what we will be talking about.
Well, this week on Showbiz Sandbox, we will cover the lack of worldwide box office. Then we'll run down just some of the latest delays and cancellations in the entertainment business. And frankly,
it would be quicker to just tell you what is happening rather than what isn't.
All right, so let me tell you what is happening. Okay, actually, no, I can't because nothing is happening.
Podcasts
are happening. In China, actually, a few cinemas are opening back up. And, you know, who wants to go see Harry Potter in 3D?
Me.
Well, actually, very few people are going, but it may give a glimpse of where the rest of the world will be within 6 months after being hit by the coronavirus. Last week, we talked with Andrew Wallenstein, the editor of Variety, to discuss the movie business. Now we'll get another perspective and to do that, we're going to be joined by our guest, Paul Dagarabedian of ComScore. Of course, during Big Deal or Big Whoop, we'll discuss just a few of the week's top headlines. And guess what? Some of them don't have to do with coronavirus, believe it or not. Yeah. Well, first, though, as always, we turn it over to entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Giltz to fill us in on last week's box office. And in other news. No, just kidding.
And of course, we're looking at box office around the world and crickets. ComScore has decided to stop reporting worldwide box office, even though there is scattered reports of stuff happening in India and China and some other countries. Not everybody has shut down their film box office yet. And in North America, some are still open as well. So we do not have worldwide box office, and we don't have good North American numbers, but Deadline Hollywood had a story saying there are about 75 to 125 cinemas still operating. Some of them are actual hard tops. Others are drive-ins. Those are the ones doing the best business. That makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it?
It does, because of course, in a way, you kind of bring your own social distancing tool with you. It's called a car.
That's right. If you don't go into the stand to get you know snacks and cookies, or if you bring your own stuff, or you go in there and practice proper behavior and stay 6 feet away from people while you get in line, then it's possible you could be safe that. But the best thing to do would be if you went to stay in your car, and they lose the concession sales, but at least they get to have some ticket sales and people can get out of the house and see a movie. So
in fact, I would like to give Karen Krasinovich a plug. She wrote a piece for Celluloid Junkie on this very subject about, and she interviewed actually, drive-in movie theater owners from Korea to the US to the UK and to Europe. It's actually quite interesting.
Let's put that link in our show notes since you haven't done that yet. You never cross promote. You know, you're not that ruthless self-promoter that really helps one get ahead. You know, you want to get ahead, and then you got to promote, self-promote, cross-promote, build your brand. Every once in a while, you're like, oh, yeah, we had this great story in Celluloid Junkie. And I'm saying, well, why didn't we talk about it? You're like, oh, yeah.
You know what? Maybe we should have Karen on to discuss both that story. She also did a story on what film critics will be doing now that there are no films in cinemas.
Weeping. Anyway, there are around 100 cinemas open in the U.S. Drive-ins are doing the most business, and we have a top four rundown. The number one movie in North America is Pixar's Onward. It made about $71,000 last week, down just a tad from what it made the week before. The Invisible Man is at number two. That made $64,000. At number three is Bloodshot, which will be coming, of course, like now, Onward has not been announced yet, but Invisible Man and Bloodshot are both coming to home video or premium video on demand quickly, or are already available, I should say. Invisible Man is available and Bloodshot will be soon. That grossed $52,000 last week. So,
and actually, at least in the United States, mm-hmm. Onward is available for premium video on demand, unlike Universal, which is actually going out and advertising the fact that the Invisible Man is in your home. That is actually their television ad right now to say that you could watch the Invisible Man.
So they are all available on premium video. Is Bloodshot out yet? Or I couldn't remember if that was the 24th or the 31st.
I think that's the 24th or the 20th. I'd have to double check. But Onward, they quietly released it to premium video on demand. They didn't make a big hoo-ha out of it.
Right. I don't know. Yeah. Really, like it was an exciting thing. It's just, okay, it's out. And Call of the Wild is at 46,000. So Onward at number one, The Invisible Man at number two, Bloodshot at number three, and Call of the Wild at number four. The Invisible Man, probably the most notable since it's been available the longest, I think, like 5-7 days or something on premium video on demand. It's all a big mess. And obviously those numbers are a pittance, but it does tell you, A, drive-ins are a viable option done properly and safely. And B, if we had figures from China, we'd have some small, very modest numbers, but it would show us that a couple hundred screens, about 500 or about 5% of the total number, are up and running in China. So that's about 6 months or 4 months after the virus hit them strongly, something like that, 5 months. So we can perhaps anticipate being able to start opening up cinemas in June, July, or August, something like that.
Yeah, it's basically about a 6 week time frame everybody's looking at here. Six to 10 weeks. Well, in fact, you had AMC shut down entirely, saying it will be between 6 to 12 weeks, and other theater chains saying it will be 10 to 12 weeks right out of the gate.
Right. Though, of course, they don't know what they will open up to, whether it's half capacity limits or what. But that's their initial estimate. They don't actually know when they'll be able to open up again. That will depend on the decisions of the experts and medical advice. You know, the states tell you can't reopen, you can't reopen, even if you said, we're going to open up in 6 weeks.
Oh, yeah. No, this is an at least.
Right. This is just what they said. We're hoping, but that's meaningless. We'll have to see what happens. Most of the theaters in North America are shut down, and other things are shutting down. We have a little roundup of stuff before we get to Paul Garabedian. Soap operas have been a question for me and our in-house film critic, Aaron Rich. What is he doing when he can't review movies in movie theaters? Well, he watched The Invisible Man online. He watched it and The Hunt via premium video on demand. And he and his partner, his lover, his wife, whatever you call him, they thought Invisible Man was a good idea, but not well executed. But they thought The Hunt, that movie about red states versus blue states, was pretty fun. Neither of them is a good movie, but they thought The Hunt was kind of fun. So that's what they're doing. But he also is wondering about soaps. What are the soap operas going to do? The few soap operas that are left.
If you have soap, it should be antibacterial and antimicrobial. Yeah. That's the thing with viruses.
He's
you need
here
the
through Tuesday. So the American soap operas, some are online. A few are still on the networks. Will they just show reruns or will they fill it with some other entertainment? Obviously, they're not going to be filming new episodes. And soap operas do not have any backlog because they film like a week in advance or something like that. The U.S. soaps have already shut down. In the U.K., they've been lagging behind the rest of the world in terms of facing up to the crisis, and certainly in Europe, they have finally shut down their soap operas, Coronation Street and Emmerdale. Those were shut down by ITV. I can't even remember the last time soap operas were suspended, even more than a day or two. I don't even know if they shut down for 9/11, you know, because they had a backlog and they just kept filming, or I don't know if they're a few days off.
I think they may have shut down for a week and then went back. Yeah,
so it's really hard to know. I haven't seen any stories about what's going on with soaps. If you know, tell us.
Yes, you can write to us, dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can also call and leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. We're also on Twitter. We are actually updating quite frequently now during this, and probably will continue to do so even past the coronavirus epidemic or pandemic. At Showbiz Sandbox is our handle. And of course, we're on Facebook, facebook.com/showbizsandbox.
A few other fun tidbits. The West End theaters have finally shut down again, lagging much of the rest of the Western world. Cirque du Soleil has shut down, of course, all of its touring shows. They had about 44 shows in place, like in Las Vegas, or touring around the world. Those have all shut down. They've laid off 4,700 people, or about 95% of their staff. I wonder about the word staff, because I'm assuming most of the people on tour were not staff in that sense. They were probably just contracted players. So I guess it's 95% of everybody involved in any way, shape, or form with Cirque du Soleil, but basically almost everyone is laid off. Of course, Eurovision is canceled. Outdoor music festivals like Glastonbury are canceled. And in all these cases, they might have said they're delayed and maybe they will appear later in the year, or maybe they'll just wait a year. Who knows? But that's all been happening. Verizon, they say gaming activity has shot up 75%. But interestingly, music streaming last week was down 8% from 1 week earlier. I'm guessing that music streaming, though you can play music with everybody around, probably in general is not a group thing. So if you're at home and surrounded by your family, it's both harder to isolate yourself and listen to music, and you're doing things with your family, like maybe playing video games or doing other stuff communally that works better with a group. Obviously, you can all sit around and listen to an album, and you should, but maybe that's one reason it's gone down momentarily this week. And of course, the con market may go virtual. Oh, now they may delay till June or later. They're figuring it all out.
Well, there's two things going on there. You have the Cannes Film Market, the Marché du Film, which is just a market. And I don't want to say just a market. It is the market where distributors come and sell, buy and sell films for different territories. And then you have the film festival. The film festival has been delayed during to potentially the last week of June, early July. Guess what? That's when the Cannes Lion was scheduled. The Cannes Lion postponed itself until to fall. Well, now the Cannes Film Festival said, well, if you're going to vacate that spot, we'll just potentially fill it.
Right. And who knows what they'll do. Maybe at that stage, they'll be able to hold the festival, but with, you know, a quarter of the usual participants and have a seat or two between people, if the health experts say that that's a safe way of going forward at that stage. Or maybe they'll hold it as usual. Maybe they'll have to delay a year entirely, but we'll know when we get closer. And of course, we discussed off air some of the ramifications of that. A big one being, hey, all those journalists who are used to being able to go to Cannes will be annoyed if maybe they can only invite 1/4 of the journalists. And of course, they'll choose the New York Times and the Times of London and the big players, and the little guys will get shunted to the side.
Right. It'll be a very interesting They're in an interesting predicament.
Well, I don't think it's a predicament. We've got a pandemic. They need to do what's safest for people's health. They're not going to risk people's lives just to have the Cannes Film Festival continue. Viva la cinema, but not at the expense of my life, please. You know, so they'll hopefully they will make the smart choices. The French government is watching, and we all want it to proceed forward, either wait a year or maybe do it in the fall. But of course, that throws all the other festivals out of whack, and they're all going to have to make, you know, changes to how they do business until we get back to a new state of normal, which could take a year or 18 months once we get an actual vaccination and all herd immunity and all that sort of thing. So it's very complicated. It's interesting. Some other talks, of course, I'm looking at non-cinema stuff. Well, the way, you know, a bunch of movies headed right to premium video on demand, The Way Back with Ben Affleck, which you would expect, and yes, Onward. And John Fithian weighed in on what's happening with cinema. He had some strong words to say. We'll talk with Paul Derek Garabedian about that. Alamo Drafthouse, they set up a $2 million fund for their furloughed employees. That covers people who work at the ones owned by the company.
About half,
according to the article I read. Half of the franchises are company owned. The other half are independent franchises. So it covers about half of the Alamo Drafthouses in the country, unless the story I linked to got that wrong. That's always possible. So, you know, it's time to talk about cinema, hopefully from a bit of an exhibitor point of view and a box office point of view. So we love to bring on Paul from ComScore.
Well, yes, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we will be talking to Paul de Garabedian. He's the senior analyst at ComScore. And I don't know whether it's ComScore or ComScore Media, but Paul will definitely tell us. Paul, thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Michael and Sterling.
Normally we have you you on to talk about like the big box office news of the week, but the fact is we have you on to talk about the fact that the big news is there is no big box office news.
Yeah, it's really an odd situation. I've been quoted quite a bit just talking about my experience in the business, doing the numbers on Sunday for the past almost 30 years, only missing that a couple of times due to unforeseen circumstances of my own, but literally only twice in almost 30 years have I not gotten up early to do the numbers on Sunday. I got up early yesterday, but I wasn't able to do my normal and usual chart and commentary, and it was rather sad. But of course, given the current situation, it's, you know, for me, this was, something just very odd not to be doing that. But everyone is sharing in this tragic worldwide situation. And so I'm more concerned just about humanity in general right now. But yes, in terms of the business, in terms of getting numbers out, we just didn't have any to really report yesterday.
And it's not because there's a technical glitch. It's because almost every movie theater in the world is closed down.
That's
almost.
Right.
We'll talk about which movie theaters are open and opening. And in China, they're opening a little bit.
That's right.
But most of the cinemas throughout the world are closed, including in Latin America and South America. However, in the case of certain territories in like, say, Brazil or Argentina or Chile, the problem is not the coronavirus per se right now. It will be in about a week. However, it's lack of film. They have no film to show.
Well, yeah, it's that. And also we see every day that new protocols are being presented for various communities, cities, countries, as far as shelter at home or shelter in place kind of orders. And that precludes, you know, if you can't literally go anywhere, and this is true for restaurants and concert venues, and it's obvious that it's affecting every business, not just the movie business, that if people literally can't go, then there's nothing to report at that point. I want to make it clear, though, and I've seen some headlines that are using the word, this is the end of box office reporting. No, it's not. It's a pause. It's the appropriate thing to do right now, and at some point, it will be back. I'll be loving the day when I'm up at 6:30 on a Sunday, whereas I used to go, oh man, I got to get up early again on a Sunday. Now I'm going to be looking forward to that day and putting out the numbers, because we all love going to the movies. And by going to the movies, I mean going out to the movies. And we're seeing a lot of drive-ins that are seeing the benefits of that people are manifesting that need to be in a communal environment seeing a movie by going to a drive-in.
Well, let's bring it back first. What's happening at ComScore? Is everyone working from home? Have they had to furlough any people, or what's happening there?
Pretty much everyone's working from home. And I'm telling you, you tend to bond very heavily within these meetings, you know, the Zoom meetings that I think everyone's having. We're seeing happy hours being done, musical performances around the world. And at ComScore, our teams are just really huddling together around the hearth of the computer, if you will, to stay in contact, constantly working on our projects and doing everything we can and do for our clients. And that's not stopping at all. That's just continuing. We're going full steam ahead given the current situation.
Have you always been available to work from home, or was that something you guys had to scramble to do some things to make sure you could continue everything via the cloud or whatever you're doing?
Pretty seamless for us, because it's already, we had, you know, protocols in place with the cloud and being able to share data and information and charts and different things. And it's just been a really good situation. I've worked from home for literally the last 12 years. So it wasn't a big change for me, because I kind of work 24/7, given having international clients and that the news never sleeps, if you will. And there's always something to talk about, whether it be positive, negative, or whatever it is. We're there to get the data out as best we can. And certainly this is a very strange moment right now. But
well, we're all used to working from home, Sperling, you and I, but suddenly there are a lot of other people around at home too. They're yes, here all day long.
That's so right. Now, that's now, right.
Actually, the funniest thing I heard was somebody said in the voice of the trailer guy, you know, in a world where your kids are home from school and the coronavirus has swept through the nation, would you rather quarantine in place with A, your wife and children, or, and the person just immediately goes, B. Yeah.
That is the funniest video out there right now, or one of the funniest. And, you know, we all need a laugh right now. And music is also very important. You know, if you play an instrument or you don't, learn one and start playing. I think it's really important, but our industry is very resilient. And I think the people who work within it are really steadfast in their devotion to movies. And in particular for my side of things, and I think for yours as well, we love the movie theater.
Well, can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
Because, you know, AMC, and Adam Aaron was out front on this. He basically came out and said, look, AMC, generally a very healthy business. We have a lot of cash on hand, or at least had a lot of cash on hand. He went through the whole, all of his financials from the past year, but he said, you know, we have about $30 million of fixed costs per week just to stay in business.
Yeah.
And last week we had $0 in income, and we can't sustain that. They had to let go of 26,000 low-wage employees.
I know, it's incredibly sad and tragic for all those people. I think, you know, John Fithian, NATO, you know, National Association of Theater Owners, they're representing for this business and doing, and I know he and they are doing everything they can to support all of those who work in exhibition. And that's really important. And this is, you know, this is affecting so many businesses. And so, but yet it's affecting people. And for a lot of people, that's their, you know, they go to the theater every day and do their thing. Now they're not able to do that. And so I far be it for me to speak. I will defer to NATO and John Fithian and his team on all of that. But I know they're working diligently to get whatever relief they can for the theater business.
But there's
what are you hearing from theater owners?
Well, of course, theater owners are just, you know, this is just, this changes everything right now. And it's not that they want, you know, just like every other business, they had no choice. I mean, you really have no choice in the matter. It's an unforeseen circumstance. And I think anyone who's trying to turn this into a mandate against the movie theater, that's completely misguided. Because last year we had streaming as well, and yet we had the biggest global year in movie theaters at the box office. So both these things live simultaneously side by side. But right now, obviously, people can't physically get to a movie theater. But I think the drive-in boom is really interesting because it's showing how important that communal movie theater experience is to people. And that when movie theaters reopen down the line, they're going to go to their local movie theater and be celebrating the fact that they can do that.
Absolutely. Andrew Wallenstein of Variety was on last week, and he said he worried that if this went on for 6 months or whatever, that young people might get in the habit of not going to the movies. And I felt like, well, they already can watch anything on demand
That's
at home.
Right.
So I think they're just going to be chomping at the bit to go to theaters.
I do, and too. And I think, too, that an analogy might be, I mean, we always talk about how people have kitchens in their homes, yet they still go out to restaurants. Well, that's true. But now, That would be like saying, well, everyone's going to be cooking now at home a lot more than normal. So once restaurants reopen, they won't go back. They're going to go back. People are going to want to do those things, hit the bars and do all that. I mean, look, we have to be all really smart about what we're doing right now. Until the all clear is given and people feel safe and comfortable, they shouldn't do anything they don't want to do. But I think people, you're right, they already had and have all those options. And yet the movie theater, and earlier this year, we were running at the, you know, around Bad Boys for Life when that movie came out, we were running like 12% ahead of last year. And it was only until 2 or 3 weeks ago when we started seeing that dip for obvious reasons. But 2020 was actually off to a gangbuster start after a lot had said 2020 would be, you know, and this is pre this situation, but people were saying, well, it won't be as big of a year as 2019, but we were off to a great start. So it shows that people had the intention and the desire to go to the movies, and this situation happened.
But the burden on exhibitors, of course, is great. But when most people think of exhibitors, they think of AMC and Regal and Landmark. And it's hard for people to remember that about half of the screens in this country are owned by medium and small side chains and mom and pops. And the burden on them, they don't have a cash reserve like AMC has. They don't have anything that they can draw upon. Right. It's got to be a lot harder for those smaller people to be struggling right now.
Most certainly. And in every business, if you're a sole proprietor or small business, Michael, I think you're just trying to figure out how to keep your family safe and keep an income. And then you're also trying to look out for your employees as well. So it's absolutely tragic what people are having to go through right now. But again, no fault of anyone's, just kind of, you know, a circumstance that came up and now we're all dealing with it. And it's just, it's unfortunate for sure. But I'm very optimistic that down the road, as you were saying, people are going to be really anxious to go do all those things that are inherently human, you know, wanting to be outside of the home and be with each other and hang out and do all those fun things. For now, we have to do what we have to do. But I think any sweeping pronouncements about the future of the movie theater are just, at this point, I don't see how you can make that leap right now.
What, you know, speaking of the future, what are you going to do in the future when everything kind of gets back to semi-normal or even normal, when you have a clean, normal year? And you have to, let's say 2021, everything's kind of up and humming again in January. How do you go back and say, well, we're 500% year over year? I mean, what do you do?
You ignore that.
You know, I think a lot of asterisks are going to be needed.
We're going to run out of asterisks like face math.
But those year over year comparisons are going to obviously be skewed dramatically. And I think we will have to somehow wait the data.
Just go back to 2019.
Or look at per location averages and compare those to, like you said, maybe 2 years before. I think everybody understands that it's going to be, and even right now, every day I normally do a year-to-date update, like, oh, the year is up 5%, it's up 6%. Every week it changes. Well, right now there's no point in doing a year-to-date chart because last year obviously was up and running a year ago. Those comps won't really be statistically or mathematically relevant at this point.
Well, ComScore does a lot more than just the international box office, but we depend on it every week for that. We link to you in our show notes. We talk about the work that you guys get, but you also, of course, cover like TV engagement and mobile and other stuff. And one of the things you cover is video on demand, which of course will become more prominent. Those charts do not include grosses, of course, because the studios don't like to release that. Ever since the DVD, studios like to keep the information on how much money they were making to themselves because they were worried that the stars might go, how much did you make last week?
Right.
So we have the, you know, we can link to the ComScore notes about video on demand. For example, in the current chart, Bombshell was number one.
That's
Knives
right.
Out was number two. Uncut Gems was number three. Spies in Disguise was number four. And Frozen 2, which came out earlier than expected, was at number five. Those chart figures are for the week of March 9th through the 15th. So they lag behind. They're not as instantaneous as the movie box offices. Is there a chance that that might catch up, or why it does that have like a 2 week delay?
Yeah, it's a little, the compiling of that data is far different than how the movie theater data point of sale is compiled by ComScore. And so there's always a bit of a lag there. We become so accustomed because the movie data being like, you know, it's Sunday
minute
morning
by minute.
Yeah. We already have the weekend estimates. Remember, the studios are the ones who gather that data from the ComScore information, and then they put their blessing on it and send out their studio reported numbers on a Sunday morning. And that's what we put in our charts. It goes out everywhere. And I think for ComScore, also tracking all these different, I mean, we're a multi-media, you know, we're a giant company that it's cross-platform measurement, meaning across every platform, we're measuring that data. And then all that data works together to give a big picture idea of what's going on. Right now, the movie data is different, but we're also able to look at things like drive-ins, We're going to be putting out some information on that very soon. I think that's a very positive story. I think it's a story that's rooted in our desire to go to the movie theater in any way we can. It's just now via your automobile, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's like a built-in, I think I may have said this, it's a built-in social distancing tool.
And I saw somewhere, I don't know if it's true, that though some theaters were saying one person per car. I don't know if that's...
No, that can't be.
I don't know if that's...
That makes no sense.
That defeats the purpose of the whole drive-in experience.
Well, you can look at the person in the next car and wave and, you know, it's really interesting. But it just shows how that there are things that people really want to do. And even like we have a friend who's a DJ and he did a Zoom, you know, or whatever, he did a video platform party where everyone was engaged. What people are doing happy hour, together, but separate. But it's, I think that's great. We have to maintain that. Just talking to you guys make me feel better because we need to be interacting like this. And the movie theater is one of the most perfect manifestations of that communal desire and what we like to do. And it's also because we love movies so much that it's just fun watching movies in that environment. And someday that'll come back. And I think people are going to be really excited for that. I know I will be.
Do you hear that, listeners? If you listen to us, you will feel better.
That's right. Now, let me
guarantee it, but we try.
No. Tell us your box office origin story, because I will tell you, I've been a geek since I was a kid. I pored over TV ratings and the Billboard charts and the box office charts. I would drive half an hour in high school to go to a store that carried Variety and Billboard, and then I would magically be able to scan the chart and see movies that had opened up and what they made per screen and what that meant. This was long before you had USA Today and all these places carrying the top five box office. So I've been doing that since I was a kid. It's a little freaky that there are no numbers. I was so desperate, I was quoting a Deadline story today and saying, the number one movie is Onward. It grossed $67,000 this week. I was just happy to be able to say that. Yeah. So what was your story as a kid? When did you become obsessed with movie box office figures?
Well, it was really in the early 90s. That's when I started reading the chart in the LA Times. And I saw the name of the company that was putting out that chart. And I played hooky from my job as a marketing coordinator at an architectural firm. This was in March of 93. Met the gentleman, elderly gentleman who ran the company, and I brought a LaserJet under one hand, a LaserJet 2 printer under one hand, and some kind of computer under the other, or maybe on a cart because it wasn't a small computer. And he hired me on the spot. And that was in March of 93, and I've been doing the same. I've been with different companies. I own my own company called Media by Numbers for a while. Hollywood.com acquired that company. I started with Rentrack about 6 years ago. That became Comscore, part of Comscore. So I've been at, you know, Rentrack, Comscore now for over 6 years. I just love the movies. My dad took me and, you know, myself and me and my sisters to see 2001 A Space Odyssey at the Cinerama Dome back in the 60s. Cool. And that's how I, you know, that really sparked that love for movies and filmmakers. And then really just like you, obsessed with the numbers. My dad was a mathematician and a scientist. I fell very far from that tree though. I'm no mathematician like my dad, but I do love the numbers, but I also love the movies. It's putting a metric to the art, which I don't always agree with, because if a movie doesn't make a ton of money, that doesn't mean it's not a good movie. I have a buddy who wrote a movie, and in the movie he says, just because one company sells the most hamburgers doesn't mean that's the best hamburger. So just because a movie isn't necessarily the top grosser, there's a lot of great movies that are lower down on the chart that are no less important and exciting. And have huge per theater averages often, by the way, in fewer theaters. So I just love movies. And we're going to, you know, see these numbers again. I'm not sure when, but I think we'll all be excited to see that.
Well, we know at some point movie theaters will open again. I mean, it's, you know, we're seeing it in China.
That's right.
How closely are you monitoring what's happening in China? Does Comscore collect the Chinese box office numbers?
We collect box office all over the world. And we're looking at that very carefully. I think that's a interesting situation that's occurring, because it's showing that if proper protocols are taken down the road, many of these businesses start restoring themselves, start coming back online. But we have to be careful because we just don't, we're in such uncharted territory. I probably said that 1,000 times over the past 2 weeks, but we are, and we're in an unprecedented, and I've said that word about 1,000 times in the past 2 weeks, unprecedented situation. So I think we're all just collectively, we just want to see all these things come back. But for right now, we got to do what's right for our families, ourselves, the health and well-being of the world and everyone in it. So it's a, I never thought we would be talking about this kind of thing. Nobody could have foreseen this.
It's been said quite frequently that it's very difficult to get box office numbers out of China, even under normal circumstances. So, have you found it difficult to get numbers out of China previous to the coronavirus pandemic?
I mean, because every weekend, and in fact, if you look at some of the releases that the studios would put out on Sunday morning, they would have their North American box office, their international with China broken out, and all that data was being collected, and Comscore is at the forefront of that. I mean, point of sale around the world. So we're just going to be looking at all these various territories that are at different points in this situation and then see how they come back online and what the grosses are looking like at that point.
Yeah, and ignoring this situation, I think it's always been a challenge to get box office figures from India. We can see sometimes there are movies that they're just not reporting their numbers to you. They're big grossing movies. They're opening up in North America and in India. And we've sort of kept an eye on the Indian box office. Are you guys reaching out to try and better incorporate or get them to feed into your system so that you can have Indian box office right up there with the Chinese box office in terms of covering their big hits?
India is has an incredible cinematic culture and movie culture. And, as far as getting the numbers, we have people of our, we have folks in those territories in virtually every territory around the world collecting the box office numbers. So I think that's going to get even more robust as time goes on. Although, of course, right now in this situation,
it's not a lot. But what are the challenges? Because there will often be movies that open up in India and they won't have popped up on Comscore yet. And that's not your guys' fault. If they're not providing the info, you can't report on it.
Right, exactly. And then often it's Sunday morning. Remember, often on Sunday morning, even for North American grosses, the chart will have many fewer films than we get reported on Monday. Because some of the smaller companies, they don't have the infrastructure to be reporting numbers on a Sunday morning. So often you'll see, let's say, 45 movies. Always the top 10 is there, but you might have 40 movies and then on our chart. And then on Monday, the Comscore chart that comes out midday Pacific time could have as many as 120 films on there. So often some of those films that they may not be available on Sunday, but they're generally available on Monday. But you know how it goes. The Sunday thing is like everything to us. And we want to know what's going on before it almost happens, meaning we have an estimate for the weekend before the weekend's over.
Well, we've certainly looked forward to getting your estimates once theaters reopen. And, we mention them every week. We mention Comscore every week. So
really appreciate as theaters, it, guys.
Certainly, we hope that that's sooner rather than later.
We all do, for sure. I can't wait for that day. I mean, I used to complain about getting up on Sunday morning. I'm still going to do it anyway because my natural instinct is to do that. We will be back for sure. We will definitely be back.
Well, certainly we hope to have you back when you start reporting again on the box office, ideally this summer box office, in fact.
Absolutely. I'll be here. Always here for you guys.
Thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
All right, Sperling, Michael, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, that's the first time I've spoken to Paul from Comscore. I've known him for years.
I want to say he's been a guest on the show. I feel like he's been a guest on the show.
Has he been? Exhibitor Relations, Rent Tracker. I remember all those years. So that was good to have him here. Like everybody, of course, we know that the health and safety of people comes first. But of course, you have to look short-term and long-term about what you're going to do with your business, how you're going to get back up and running, and what's going to happen to the movie industry. So,
actually one of the things that Paul was talking about long before we started talking about box office and just setting this up. you know, he's somewhat reluctant, as are many, to talk about business when everybody is, you know, facing health issues.
Well, we're all making business decisions, though, right now. You can see right now when we're talking, Congress is debating what sort of bill to do. And that's, you have to discuss it and debate it and say who needs to be loaned money and what way. Should there be, you know, restrictions on it? Should there be codicils? Should there be requirements? You know, this is what you got to do. If you want your business to pop back up again in a few weeks or in 3 months from now, you got to plan and prepare and think about, how am I going to do this? How am I going to be safe and yet still have a company that people can come back and work for? I've got friends who own a restaurant and, you know, they're trying to keep doing takeout in a safe manner so their employees are not put at risk, but to make sure they still have a restaurant that their employees can come work at 2 months from now when they open back up again, God willing.
Well, I'm hoping it's even sooner than that.
Yeah. So we shall see. But you know, I think it's a big deal. That's it. I'm just saying big deal. I'm just saying the words big deal.
Oh, okay. I see what you're doing there.
This whole coronavirus is a big deal.
I see what you're doing there. I guess it is time for Big Deal or Big Whoop, our weekly segment where we discuss the top headlines in entertainment and tell you whether they're really important or just overhyped nonsense. Our first story. This is just crazy. The Paradigm Talent Agency. It's a big talent agency here.
It's not they one have, of the, is it one of the big four?
No, but it is definitely very well known. It's definitely, you know, as far as that tier right underneath CAA, UTA, ICM, William Morris, Endeavor, it's like right underneath there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have struck a 5-year deal with the Writers Guild of America. Ironically, in the wake of the pandemic, many talent agencies are laying off staff. Paradigm fired about 1/6 of its staff, and the rest took 50% pay cuts. William Morris Endeavor, they're kind of doing the same thing, by the way. Very little is happening with film and TV production since it's ground to a halt, but writers are used to self-isolating anyway. So
hey.
Thus, those agents representing writers are about the only ones doing any business. With this deal, the Lit Department will officially be getting back to work, or getting paid for the work they've been doing all along anyway, but nobody's been talking about, depending on who you talk to. Big deal or big whoop?
Well, you tell me, because you have strong opinions, obviously.
Well, I think really there's very little that agencies can do. They really do work based on getting work for their clients, and they basically only work when they make money, when their clients make money. But here's the thing. Many of these agencies, whether it's William Morris Endeavor or Paradigm or Innovative Artists, a big chunk of their revenue, sometimes more than half, and I think at William Morris Endeavor, it's more than 50% of their revenue, comes from live events. They book live events. Well, guess what's not happening right now? Live events. So they literally, much like AMC theaters, have no money coming in during this time period.
So, and you think that made them say, we better strike a darn deal? So they do TV packaging. This is not like a literary agency that hasn't really dealt in TV packaging. That is a big part of their business. This deal allows them to keep packaging until December of 2021. That's an extension. I think it's farther along than others, which means everybody else will be grandfathered in. So anyone who
Correct.
Signs with the WGA will now be able to keep doing TV packaging until the end of next year, December of 2021. They also got a bump up. Previously, WGA had required that you have no more than a 5% investment in an outside production company. Now they're able to bump that up to 10%. They're saying, okay, yes, you can have 10% a piece of a production company, but no more. So that is double what people were able to do previously. So there were some new concessions made and new agreements have been struck. And so Paradigm has signed on. Whether other agencies say in the short term, we need to get work, so let's do this deal, or they still think long term and say, we think it's a bad deal overall, we're not ready to budge, we'll find out. Do you think others will do the same? Will they say, will CAA and ICM and William Morris Endeavor say, you know what? Maybe we need to make a deal.
I think if they're allowed to package until 2021, the thing is, packaging is so much a part of CAA, ICM, you know, all those big agencies. They have really, you know, CAA is known as, by the way, the agency that ER built. The reality is it was around long before ER.
It's right, just Cosby that, Show. Yeah.
The Cosby Show was William Morris. It
oh,
kept
right,
William
right.
Morris open during the 90s.
Right. And packaging has not gone away for all the content being created for streamers. all those shows being made for networks, all those reality shows done for cable, those are being packaged and repackaged around the world, and they're making a lot of money off of them. So don't think packaging's gone. It's not the past.
It's not gone, but it's changed. And I guess that's part of Paradigm's kind of foresight here, is they're saying, yes, you know what? 2021, that's 2 years from now, or a year and a half from now, we'll at least be able to see how packaging has shifted in that time, and then be able to negotiate from a standpoint of knowledge.
Well, sitcoms can still be. They signed a 5-year deal, however. You know, signed a 5-year deal with the WGA, and sitcoms are still being stripped. Procedurals are still being sold to cable companies and other networks all over the world. So there's a lot of money being made in packaging.
Yes, you can send some of it to us. Let me give you our address.
Please. Well, you have to set up a charitable. We do not have it. You've got time on your hands. Time to do that PayPal account. But anyway.
Hey, we're still working every week. We're still working.
How is Celluloid Junkie doing? Have you had to lay any people off, or what are you guys doing?
Yes, we have taken 100% pay cuts.
Well, we've done that here at Showbiz Sandbox as well. We're all in it together.
Yeah.
Broke.
It's amazing when you take 100% pay cut of zero, you're still making the same amount of money.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll keep moving.
Well, just because we're dealing with a health crisis, that's no reason to stop suing people, Michael. Okay, so get your lawyer on the phone and start suing people.
Oh, by the way, the UTA has just cut salaries across the board.
Yeah, it's the only thing they can do to stay open.
Yeah.
Well, former New York City prosecutor and best-selling author Linda Fairstein is suing Netflix and director Ava DuVernay for how they portrayed her in the miniseries When They See Us. That work revolved around the injustice surrounding the prosecution and sentencing of what are known as the Central Park Five, young men accused and convicted of rape who spent years in prison despite being coerced to confess and, you know, other distortions of the judicial process. There's a great documentary about it, too. Fairstein says she was defamed. Big deal or big whoop?
Big whoop, right? We'll see what happens if she has a case. She'll have to go to court. I have not studied the stuff in depth enough to say she's outrageous. It's absurd, but she is a public figure. It's going to be a high bar for her to meet to say that they had malicious intent and that she is not enough of a public figure that they had the right to have their opinion. So just off the cuff, one would imagine it's very high bar for her to pull that off. But she's a lawyer. She should know that. So we'll see.
And
what
maybe
happens.
She thought just by saying it, then people will think, well, yeah.
If you don't
that movie-
sue, you're saying that, you know, yeah. But that's not really true. I don't think. I think you can object without saying, you know, that you can necessarily prove it in a court of law. I don't think it's worth spending 6 or 7 figures just to have a good PR minute. You know, is it a good PR minute when you say, well, I'm going to sue, and then you fail? You know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Now, are you not entertained, at least by our show? Are you not entertained?
Hopefully.
Well, yes, we are, actually, to the tune of $101 billion, to be exact. Woohoo! I'm going to go out and get parked. The drinks are on me tonight. No, get it? Because you can't actually go out and drink?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's, by the way, how much the global entertainment business generated in 2019. $101 billion from movies, TV, and streaming. What about music? Movies generated $42 billion at the box office alone. The other $52 billion, wow, that's a lot of money, came from digital, home, and mobile entertainment. These figures came from the Motion Picture Association, which explains why, quote-unquote, global entertainment doesn't include recorded music, concerts, theater, dance, video games, and online gaming, or a ton of other things people might classify as entertainment. But movies and TV are indeed a massive industry. Big deal or big whoop?
Well, it's a big deal crossing the $100 billion mark. And of course, that figure will be down in 2020, no doubt about it. And you think about that, $100 billion worldwide, and 1% of it was from one film alone, Joker. I mean, that's
true.
That's amazing. You think just one movie, you got a couple movies that have grossed $1 billion or $2 billion, just 2 or 3 movies alone. That's a lot of money to be 1% of the entire annual global entertainment from movies and TV. I also don't think they're capturing some other figures, but you know, there's a lot of money being made in TV too. But 42, you know, I guess they're doing the figures right. And of course, it is the motion picture people. That's why all those other areas aren't included. So I don't think they should be calling it the global entertainment biz. I think that's misleading and silly. They should be saying something like movies and TV, you know, it's like, that's not the global entertainment business. It's much bigger than that. So they're not helping anybody by, you know, wrongly classifying what they do. It's a big business on its own. No reason not to accurately describe what you're talking about. And global entertainment does not even remotely capture, you know, all of the stuff. That's much bigger than what they're saying. So I feel like their press releases and stuff was very misleading. I locked that, saw that figure and thought, my God, but movies are $40 billion alone. How can that be? Turns yeah. out they're not including most things. Anyway.
If you're self-isolating and need something new to read,
I do.
How about Woody Allen's memoir? Oh. The now shunned director can't get his new movie shown in U.S. theaters, and then he went begging when his proposal to write a memoir was turned down by publishers. However, Hachette secretly, they kind of said yes, announced plan to publish and then back down when it's their own employees protested. They felt it was cynical and wrong to tout the work of journalist Ronan Farrow and then turn around and give Allen a platform. As we predicted, another publisher stepped forward. Arcade Books made the Allen memoir apropos of nothing available, a surprising drop a la Beyonce. Big deal or big whoop?
I think it's a big whoop. We knew this would happen. We were right to say it was going to happen. We knew someone would step forward. Arcade is a smaller publisher. They're a subdivision of Skyhorse Publishing. They have lots of different imprints, and they're known for sometimes publishing more controversial stuff, like Alan Dershowitz, who is now controversial, sadly, given his earlier career and stuff he did, but now he is. Conspiracy theorist Jim Garrison, he gets published by Arcade. And this is exactly who should step forward, a small company that can get it out quick. If you think his book deserves to be read, and I feel like, well, why not? If you don't want to give him money, don't give him money. If you don't want to read it, you don't have to read it. But there's no reason why a director of this sort or person shouldn't be able to tell their story. Why not? You don't have to read it. I don't have to buy it. The story's done. But yeah, I'm actually kind of interested to read it. I don't want to give Woody Allen any money necessarily, but I haven't even said I'm never going to see another of his movies again. You know, it's just you take it on your own case by case, whether you feel icky or whether you feel like, yeah, I'm interested. Not because he's going to defend himself on this stuff. I think he mostly ignores it. But if you're interested in what he's going to say about his career, despite the fact that you think he might have a reprehensible private life, there's stuff still to be learned, I think. So I'm glad it's out there. I'm glad I can maybe someday borrow it from my library or get a review copy. I'll be interested to see if he says anything interesting about movies in the creative process. And yet, at the same time, I'll be able to recognize that this isn't a guy that you necessarily want to admire in his private life. You can do both things at the same time. It's possible.
You know who can't do anything anymore?
Us. Well, oh, God, you're because they're dead. Oh, God.
Thank you.
Is that, that's what you're saying? That's your segue?
God. That's my segue. To our obituary section, where we do have, I think, what, two different obituaries this week?
Mm-hmm.
We have actor Lyle Wagner, who I believe you like to call a walking Ken doll.
Well, that's not me. That's many people have called him that. You know, that was sort of his, you know, he was just the mannequin handsome, TV news anchor handsome guy who appeared on the Carol Burnett Show.
Ah, okay. So he looked a lot like me.
That's exactly right. Yeah, he was a walking Ken doll. He started on the Carol Burnett Show as an announcer, but whenever they needed like some stiff, good-looking guy for Carol Burnett to drool over or whatever, they would bring him on camera, and then slowly they started to use him a little bit more and more. He was on there for a number of seasons. Then he got cast in the Wonder Woman TV series, and he did that for 3 years. I thought, you know, I grew up with Carol Burnett Show. I watched that every Saturday night with my mom. We would watch, you know, whatever was on. At one point, very briefly, there was the greatest lineup of all time. But always at 9 o'clock was Mary Tyler Moore. At 9:30 was Bob Newhart. And at 10 o'clock was Carol Burnett. And I would fall asleep if there was dancing at the end. But anyway, I love the Carol Burnett Show. And I thought, yeah, but this guy's not that important. There's probably nothing interesting to say about, oh, you read the obituaries. And it turns out he had like a side career of beyond his main career, which became his main career, of providing trailers and mobile homes to TV and movie sets. When he was cast on Wonder Woman, he found out that his trailer in the first season was rented from like this private family. They got a mobile home actually and set it up for him as his trailer. And he found out that they were renting it from these people, paying all this money every week, every month to have this trailer available. And he, you know, was doing the math. He said he was always trying to figure out side angles and entrepreneur stuff he could do. And he said, well, if I had a mobile home, would you pay me to rent it for me? And the producer's like, sure. So he bought one, and they did for the next 3 seasons of the show, more than paying him back for the mobile home and making money on the side. So then he switched from mobile homes to trailers because they were more reasonable. He designed one especially, or he and his team, for makeup artists, and they loved it. They thought this trailer that they designed for makeup artists was perfect, and he was off. And in 2015 alone, according to CNBC, he grossed his company $17 million renting out trailers and stuff to studios and TV companies. He provided 30 trailers to Dancing with the Stars alone. Like, good
for you.
Can I tell
you something?
Good for you, Lyle Wagner. That's awesome.
I had no idea. I've talked to this guy in the past for pieces.
Yeah. Lyle Wagner? About what and why?
I didn't realize he owned Star Wagons.
Yes, Star Wagoners. Yes, Star Wagons.
I did a piece on the company that does this, and I was like, could it be the same company? There must be more than one company. No, it was this guy. And I talked to the owner, and it was, now come to think of it, yeah, it was.
It was Lyle Wagner, and you didn't realize he was the actor?
No, I had no idea.
Oh, that's so you spoke to Lyle, and you were speaking to him as the owner of Star Wagons, never connecting the fact that he was an actor from Wonder Woman and the Carol Burnett Show.
No, and he never mentioned it either.
Oh, that's hilarious. Oh, way to do your homework. This was the day before the internet, I guess. I'm trying to cut you some slack here, Sperling.
Oh, it was, let's put it this way. It was at the very beginning of the internet. It was like 1997, 1999.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, your acting career doesn't last forever. There's Lyle Wagner saying, hey, I need another side angle. And good for him. That's pretty awesome.
Well, another actor that, singer.
He's an actor. He did act.
Here's my connection to Kenny Rogers. When I worked at the Cineplex Odeon, Route 4, it started off, just to give you some sense, as the RKO Route 4 Tenplex. Yeah, that's how long ago this... It was one of the first big multiplexes in the country.
Our next film, Citizen Kane.
No, it was more like our next film, The Goonies, 1985-86. That I started working there, and two people would come in regularly because it was just outside New York City. It was in New Jersey. One of them was Eddie Murphy, and the other was Kenny Rogers. And I would see him all the time.
That's
coming
at the peak of his fame, 85.
Yes, exactly.
Same with Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, exactly. Eddie Murphy would come in with about 50 people. It was ridiculous. Kenny Rogers would come in with just one bodyguard, and he'd go see a movie, and then that, you know, from time to time. But Kenny Rogers, who I'm talking about now, passed away at the age of 81.
Died. He died. Let's not say passed. He passed. He went on to the other side. No, he died. It's okay to say died, I think. He had 21 number one hits on the country charts alone. He had 11 number one albums on the country charts. He charted with more than 120 songs across multiple genres like country, pop, and adult contemporary. He sold more than 100 million albums worldwide, half of them in the U.S. alone, and probably one-fourth of his whole worldwide total was probably his first greatest hit set. You know, that was the monster album that made him an icon. He did duets with Sheena Easton and, of course, Dolly Parton via Islands in the Stream. He had Lionel Richie writing him songs. His biggest hit is Lionel Richie's song Lady, which stayed number one on the pop charts for 6 weeks. And in fact, The Gambler, which is the song you're immediately thinking of, that peaked at number 16 on the pop charts. I don't think that even went to number one on the country charts. He won Grammys. He won tons of Country Music Association awards. He made TV movies, including in the Gambler franchise. He tried to make a feature film called Six Pack and realized, I'm not really an actor. Not really.
Yeah, no.
He did a restaurant chain, Kenny Rogers Roasters, which came and went, but is still big in Japan, or at least parts of Asia. It's still around in Asia. So he's not a great talent, but he's an amiable guy. He had some really good hits. He was a monster star in country music. He really led the way for Garth Brooks in terms of how big an act you can be as a country star by staying true to yourself or crossing over, however you want to call it. He was as big as you can get. I mean, he was the biggest star around for a while. And in fact, Garth Brooks opened up for him and said he learned a lot just watching, seeing Kenny Rogers and how he treated his team and how he treated everybody, and how when days off, they would play basketball with the crew, and not just the musicians, but the crew and the people putting the sets together for his concert tours, and just made everybody part of a big family. And he encouraged, you know, Garth Brooks to do the same. And when Garth Brooks, like, he didn't have a booth or anything, people were coming to get signatures from Kenny Rogers, Garth Brooks, you know, placed himself there in the lobby. And as people came by, he's like, hey, here I am. I'm the opening act, getting people to, you know, sign stuff for them and just being friendly, just saying hi. And Kenny Rogers, like, that's the way to do it, you know? And so he was the only solo country act to hit number one on the pop charts throughout the entire 1980s. And that's during the urban cowboy phase.
That's actually quite, that's astonishing.
There are some you know, groups that hit number one on the pop chart, on the album charts. But Kenny Rogers was the only solo act, male or female. I thought Dolly Parton didn't. Nope, she didn't do it. You had to get to Shania Twain and Taylor Swift in the 90s and 2000s for other women to do it. So, you know, crossing over, especially in that era before we had SoundScan, that was not easy to do. And Kenny Rogers did it. So he's an interesting guy. Some great songs, you know, amiable fellow, nice person. But I have to say, the first album I ever bought, Kenny Rogers' Greatest Hits on cassette. And I always wanted to interview him. I always wanted to like get him and sit him down, because I find that first album, that Kenny Rogers' Greatest Hits, which sold 12 million copies in North America, another 12 million copies in the rest of the world. It sold like 20 to 25 million copies worldwide. It's got 12 songs on it, depending on the edition you're looking at. There's a slightly different one in Japan, as there often is. There are 12 tracks on it. And this sucker, you think of Kenny Rogers, nice guy, amiable, whatever, you know, Love the World Away. This sucker is dark. This album is super dark. Those songs that made his fame are really, really dark. You think about Don't Fall in Love with a Dreamer. That's about a man and telling his wife, don't fall in love with a dreamer, because she's at home at night and he's leaving, and she's holding him one more time before he's going to say goodbye, because he's always going to take off again. Ruby, Don't Take Your Love to Town. That song, my God, this song is about a Korean War veteran. I thought it was Vietnam vet when I was a kid, but it's set during the Korean War. He's paralyzed, and his wife is dressing up to go out of town on the town and sleep with other men. And he's like, for the love of God, don't leave me. Don't do that. And then he says, if I could shoot her, I would kill her right now. I mean, that, and you know, he's paralyzed. He can't do it. I mean, that is dark. Coward of the County is about rape. Lucille, his first really big hit, and that made him as an artist, I would say. Lucille sounds like an old classic country weepy, you know? You picked a fine time to leave me, Lucille, four hungry children and the crops in the field. It just sounds prototypical, but the song is about a guy named Kenny picking a woman up in a bar, and her husband shows up, and she just cuts him down to size and makes him look so small that when that guy takes her away and goes back to the hotel room, he can't perform. He cannot have sex with her because he feels so guilty about what the husband and what happened and how small she made that guy look. Reuben James is about a black man who's
We could keep going on.
No, a few more minutes. We've got nothing else to do.
A few more minutes.
We got nothing else to do. We're all bored. Reuben James is about a black man who adopts a small white child who is a bastard that nobody else in town will take care of. And he is still spat upon and treated like dirt his whole life. And when he dies, he's alone. Our hero is alone at the graveyard with the preacher saying goodbye to this nice man who took care of that kid. And then there's the gambler. Nothing dark about the gambler, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. It's about a guy
on a train. Yeah, the whole song is dark.
It's not that dark though. He's just giving good advice. He's dying, but it's the end of the line perhaps for the gambler. He could be old or whatever. But the truth is, he's broke and he's alone, and he has to bum a cigarette, and he has to beg for a little taste of whiskey. So not only is he alone and broke and going to die on an empty train bound to nowhere, but why are you taking advice from him? He is broke. Take advice from the gambler who's dressed nicely and has the best cigars. Don't take advice from the gambler who has to beg you for a cigarette. So even that song, which we all sing along to, that's got its dark element. So
you know what I really liked about Kenny Rogers? He always knew when to hold them and knew when to fold them.
Yeah,
he knew when to walk away, and he even knew when to run. He never counted his money while he was at the venue.
Sitting at the table.
Yeah.
That's right.
There'd be time enough for counting. He knew there'd be time enough for counting.
That's right. He's run out of aces, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I just think it's fascinating how dark that album is, that greatest hit set, the one that made him famous. When you really listen to it, he gives Hank Williams a run for his money. So I don't think he's an important artist, but he's certainly a big selling one. He certainly is he is important in the sense of the work that he does, the breakthroughs that he made. He hasn't created a great body of work. You listen to people talking about this or that album. I don't know if he even has a very good album in him. Maybe the greatest hit set, but even that's a little weak at times. But he's an interesting guy. He did important stuff in country music to break through the pop charts and pave the way for Garth Brooks and Shania Twain and a lot of others.
And we're paving the way for other podcasters. In fact, you could subscribe to us
on iTunes, the Google Play Store, Microsoft Marketplace, Stitcher, anywhere they give podcasts away for free. You can subscribe to us and rate and review us in those podcast aggregators. It does help us out when you do. That information can be found on our website, showbizsandbox.com. That's where you'll find links to some of the stories we discussed on today's episode, as well as those ways to contact us, dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's our email address. You can call and leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. We're also on Twitter, where our handle is @ShowbizSandbox, and on Facebook, facebook.com/ShowbizSandbox. I'd like to thank Paul DeGarabedian from ComScore for being here to talk with us. We'll place links to ComScore in our show notes, which can be found on showbizsandbox.com. The music that you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by the popular indie rock group MGMT. They can be found on their own website. It is whoismgmt.com. Michael Gilt has a website, and every week it's something new and exciting. What is it this week, Michael?
This week it's kennys.com.ph.
Oh, is that the...
Well, I tried to look up Kenny Rogers Roasters, and there it is, kennyrogersroasters.com, but you click on it, it says, you do not have permission to go to this site. I'm like, what? And I tried again, and then I went to something, and then I found, Kenny Rogers Roasters, an active site. I guess it's the Philippines, and all it says on it is, hey, advisory, because of the virus, we are not doing delivery. No delivery right now, so when we can get back to doing it, we'll let you know. So Kenny Rogers Roasters, still around, but not doing deliveries.
Okay, well, if you can't find any of Michael's coverage of the entertainment industry on the Kenny Rogers Roasters website from the Philippines, why not head on over to michaelgiltz.com? Some of my work can be found on celluloidjunkie.com. Until next week, play nice.
So, Sperling, now what about next week? What if we did like an album of the week? I could discuss like Sinatra's In the Wee Small Hours in depth, or Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. Or what do you say? We could discuss the album track by track.
Would you like me to send you hourly updates as to the number of people that are unsubscribing from our podcast?
Hey, what if I sang instead?
Yeah, well, then I can give you that update right now. 100% of them.